Today's show is sponsored by a new podcast called Somebody Somewhere.
Somebody went into Tom Wales' backyard to kill Tom Wales, and that's what they did.
Definitely pop, 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 like in succession.
One of the most notorious unsolved murders in Seattle history.
Is anyone there?
I think we should get out of here before the police come.
Well, I didn't like the fact that he was the last person to see the victim alive.
This is a well-planned assassination.
He'll kill anybody for whatever reason that it suits him at the moment.
And is it okay if I mention names?
Absolutely.
The Justice Department still has a reward for up to $1 million.
I hope somebody walks up to you with their AR-15 and sprays your brain, blood, and guts all over the pavement.
Don't get me T-boned.
Stop!
Coming in January 2018, Somebody Somewhere, an investigation into the assassination of Assistant United States Attorney Tom Wales.
Have a nice day, fucker.
God, that sounds like him.
Wow. And did he confess?
No.
Maybe because he didn't do it.
Be sure to subscribe. Hey guys, it's Vanessa with The Cleaning of John Doe. We've got a special episode for you today, and I'm here with Ethan.
Hello, everybody.
So we're taking up a bunch of questions. We had a whole bunch of different podcast hosts ask questions on your behalf. So this should be fun. Introduce you guys to some new shows, and yeah, let's get started.
This is Tyler from the Minds of Madness podcast. Mike Clark wanted to know, have you ever turned down a job because it was just too heinous?
No, but with that said, we have clients, like not our current clients, but we have worked with people where we should have turned down the job. Not because the scene was too bad.
Not because of the job, but because of the people.
Right. And, you know, unfortunately, and that's not to speak derogatorily about them, they're going through a really horrible, rotten, traumatic time in their life, whether it's death or hoarding. And usually the death clients are fine. It's usually the hoarding clients where, you know, these people have spent a better part of their life collecting certain things that are important or they hold value to them. And unfortunately, outsiders cannot wrap their head around it and they deem this like trash or unimportant stuff. So we are not necessarily liked on hoarding jobs because...
Some hoarding jobs.
Yeah, on some hoarding jobs because we have to come in and basically rip those things from their hands. And
we knew there was going to be some difficulty working with the person, you know, we always try to give people the benefit of the doubt, and most of the time it works out. Every now and then, it'll bite you.
Yeah, and you know what? We do our best, and we realize the only reason we're there is because they absolutely need us. We're not there because they want us. We're there because they're about to get kicked out of their house, or they're about to get fined by the city or county or whatever. So there are jobs that we knew from the client on the phone that it was not going to be necessarily a fun situation, but, you know, we try our best to help where we can. So, no, we've never turned down a job because it was too heinous, but we've done jobs where we should have, and not because of the work, because of the client. That's the short answer.
This is Maurice from the Up and Vanish podcast. Question: does anything have to be turned over to law enforcement that might be considered evidence? And thank you for the question.
As for things being turned over to investigators, we actually did have a situation where we found what appeared to be a suicide note. It was inside a blood-spattered notebook that was filled with other indiscernible ramblings. So to be on the safe side, we bagged it up and returned it to the investigator. But normally during a cleanup, we try to evaluate the importance of what's contaminated, and if we have any doubts at all, then, I mean, we err on the side of caution and set it aside until we have further instructions. But good question.
Hi, it's Jess from the Murder Road Trip podcast. Amber Knox was wondering, what are the dynamics between your business and law enforcement? Have there been any miscommunications or troubles related to this?
I love it. This is a great question. I still cringe at the thought. We were more than halfway through this cleanup and the coroner's department showed up and said that the scene had not been released and asked where everything was that we had handled the biohazard. And unfortunately, the person we were working for was the head of another law enforcement agency. So I didn't really think to question whether the scene had been released or not. So yeah, there was that little miscommunication. It turned out the scene was released and we were fine. And the coroner's department, their representative had wrong information, or I don't know what happened there. But yeah.
Somehow their lines got crossed.
Yeah, their lines somehow got crossed. And I pretty much shit a golden brick thinking that now I'm an accessory to God knows what happened. We got rid of all the evidence. And yeah, that was a learning experience for me early on. And we've never, ever, ever made that mistake again.
Yeah. And right now, with the law enforcement agencies we do work with, which are quite a few, we've got an awesome reputation. And we have a very, very good line with everybody we work for.
Yes. In a lot of situations, we are the company that they will call on to handle any situation within their own family. They're not supposed to refer us. You know, they know of us and they have heard good feedback on us. And we've worked a lot doing cleanups for law enforcement family members. So we do have a good rapport in that regard.
Hello, I'm Reginald Snow from the podcast All Eyes, No Voices at AENVpodcast.com. Anthony Ward on CastBox FM was wondering, the Writing on the Walls episode made a question pop in my head. You talked about how the event can happen in one room, but either blood or skull fragments can ricochet and end up in another. I know you go over every item in the room, but has there been a time that you had to return to a job site because you missed something like a skull fragment?
I've never been called back to a job because of something like that. There have been a few instances on decomps where we had to go back because the odor just wasn't resolving. I think only one incident we had where there was fluids that had seeped into the hallway under the tile. It just wasn't immediately evident when we were doing the initial cleanup. So we, you know, ended up tearing up the tile, finding a little bit more fluids. So we cleaned it, treated it, and that pretty much handled it from there.
Right. And that was also one of our early jobs, you know, so it was a learning curve. In the beginning, we tried to err on the side of caution in terms of, you know, not unnecessarily ripping up flooring that didn't need to come up. So basically, the way the tiles were set and its location to the bathroom, it didn't look like it could have gotten under the tiles. So it was shocking to learn that it had, but basically we wanted to not rip it up just for the sake of ripping it up.
Yeah, at that time we were trying way too hard not to demo anything.
Right. Yeah, we're trying to salvage everything. And the truth is when you do it that route, it becomes more costly than if you rip it up. Because, yeah, it's just...
You have to keep going back and you have more disposal costs. It's a pain.
Yeah, it becomes more costly for everybody. So, I mean, obviously, as we grow, our techniques and the way we do things have changed and developed. And, you know, we're pretty good. I mean, it's just like with any trade. The more you do it, the more comfortable and confident you get. So, I think we're pretty good now. And then the only times we've ever been called back for odor is usually psychological odor. And I think we either touched on that here or it's coming up in an episode. But
well, there was one that we did. I think we're doing an episode on that one coming up. But basically, we had We had removed all the biohazards, so there were no body fluids, but where the fluids were located was right next to an exterior wall, so that there was insulation in the wall. And what had happened was, despite the body fluids being removed, the insulation had absorbed the odor, so it continued to smell despite all of our efforts. So we had to go back, open the wall up, take out the insulation, and once we did that, no problem.
It handled it.
So it's I mean, there's so many different situations that can pop up and things that you have to look out for. But as Vanessa said, as we continue to grow and experience this stuff, we know what happens. We know how to deal with it. So
cool. Good question.
War Baby here from Murderous Minors Killer Kids podcast. Listener Ariel Shapiro asked, do you only clean locally or have you had jobs that are further away from home? You mentioned a website that you've built, but do you ever pass out business cards or try to rely solely on word of mouth? I'm curious on how a business so rooted in grief would be able to advertise without angering previous clients or getting flack from people.
That's a really good question. We pretty much go everywhere. We try
in California.
To stay, yeah, in California. We do try to stay in our own service area, but we've been specifically requested by certain people that have heard of us, you know, well outside of our service area, that we have actually, you know, we've agreed and we've gone, you know, way out of town to go take care of a job for them. But typically, you know, our service area is pretty large. It's pretty much all of Southern California. So we travel a lot.
Yeah. Bounce back and forth like a ping pong ball, but
yeah. And in terms of advertising, we do have our website, which a lot of people call off of. In the beginning, we were hesitant to advertise at all. We pretty much just relied on word of mouth and our website. And then at some point, you know, the realization came to us that although the subject matter is a bit taboo, it is a business like any other, and we advertise like any other. We've had billboards up. We've got our magnets, which we get a lot of attention off of. We do hand out business cards to everybody and anybody that is interested or wants them.
Yeah, like realtors and stuff like that.
Realtors, I mean, funeral homes. We advertise pretty heavily.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's hard to advertise because it's not like, hey, if you ever need your windows cleaned, give us a call. So it's hard to give out business cards. So we try to hand them out or, you know, get them in front of people who might
be who deal with this subject.
Yeah, exactly. Who deal with this subject. So, yeah, advertising on this it's difficult and it does have its own challenges. But I mean, we're doing pretty good with it. So, yeah, I don't even know how else to answer that. I think that covers it.
we've never had anybody really complain about our advertising.
Yeah, short of the, you know, the snide remark or the little...
Yeah, that weird lady. But yeah. No, that was...
Weird looks you get when... I had one person, I was parked in front of a post office and he came up and he shook his finger at me and he's like, that's not very nice. And I don't know what exactly it is he was talking about. I could only assume it was my magnet, but I...
Yeah, we were at the mall one time. Remember that time we came out and our magnet had been removed from our car and just thrown on the ground.
Yep.
And we never found out who it was or anything. But yeah, other than that, nobody's really been upset by it. It's one of those. I mean, you'll see billboards for funeral homes, and it's the same content. I mean, it's death, and it seems like a hard business to advertise for, but you have to realize that death happens.
Right.
And when it does, there's a huge industry that, you know, revolves around every aspect of it. And it's something that everybody needs to be prepared for.
Right.
This is Gerald Glassford from the Pop Culture Cosmos Show. And listener Kathy Franco asked, do you take before and after pictures?
Yes, we do take before and after pictures. We take them mainly for documentation purposes. Sometimes they're needed by the insurance companies, but we like to have them on hand just in case. One thing that sets us apart from other companies is we don't post our photos anywhere. We don't post them on our website. We don't post them on social media. We don't do anything like that. We do, in certain cases, ask if we have their permission to use their photos. And when we do use them, it's just for before and after.
Like a portfolio.
Yeah, like a portfolio.
Right. Our thoughts on it's kind of in bad taste. I mean, I'm just trying to look at it from a family point of view. If we had a family member who passed away and it was messy and we needed services, I wouldn't want to go to a website and see pictures of somebody else's tragedy to then feed my imagination of what my family member might look like. So for me personally, it's in bad taste. And same as hoarding. I mean, that's so private and personal. We wouldn't want to air that out for the world to see and judge and, you know, whatnot. We will show a client before and afters if they request it specifically, because sometimes they want to see the level of cleanup that we are capable of doing. And I'm not in disagreement with that, because they're obviously searching for the same services and they're just trying to see if we're capable of handling the task at hand.
Yeah, it's nice. It would be nice, you know, to have a portfolio that we could show and, you know, show how well we do our services. But again, it's just in bad taste.
It is. And it's also, honestly, it's hardly ever asked for. If you're enjoying today's episode, check out Resonate Recordings. They mix, mastered, and produced all of my episodes, and they're an awesome group. Resonate Recordings took all the worry and stress out of podcasting and made it such a unique and fun experience for me. Resonate Recordings is more than just a professional podcast editing and production service. They're like an invested business partner. Everything from hosting setup, RSS feed configuration, even to helping me find sponsors. I honestly can't say enough great things about them. I hired Resonate Recordings when I realized that I could either spend time or money. And since I can always make more money, it was an easy decision. Chances are, with a professionally produced podcast, making money off it might be easier than you think. Visit resonaterecordings.com and they'll do your first episode for free with no strings attached. But don't forget to tell them Vanessa sent you. Now back to the show.
Hey guys, this is Mandy from the Moms and Murder podcast with a question from Karen Silverstein Rodrigue. Karen asks, have you ever suggested that the house just be torn down?
No, we usually try to do as much as we can. If you do it right, it's you can treat any situation. The only time we recommend something like that is in a mobile home where there's no insurance on the trailer, or the family doesn't want it, or, you know, whatever the situation is, where it's going to be cheaper to just, you know, burn the house down than it is to get it cleaned. So yeah, it's not a common situation we run across.
Hey guys, this is Shay from Swindled. I have a question from Graham Quick, who asks, are the surviving owners of properties present when you do a cleanup, or are they not allowed onto the property until you are finished? I presume you're not allowed there until law enforcement are finished with their bit.
In most cases, yes. Yeah, we're not allowed in the scene until it's been released by the coroner's office or, you know, whatever investigating agency is doing it. But yeah, once it's released, we don't recommend the family go in there, mainly for emotional reasons. If it's like a decomp, when you smell that, you're going to smell it forever. It gets stuck not in your nose, but in your head. And every time that you think about it or you see something that reminds you of it, you're going to smell it. You know, we've accepted it. We've been walking down the street just like any other day, and then boom, with decomp.
Right. And it's something, we actually have a disclaimer in our contract about it, because oftentimes whoever found the body or a close family member who entered the scene soon after the person passed away or smelled that, like Ethan said, it kind of just stays with you and you randomly catch a whiff of it, even though you're nowhere near. We've been standing in line at fast food or whatever restaurant or movie theater, and you'll get a quick whiff of it and it's like, whoa, wait. And so, yeah. So,
yeah. And it's, you know, after we clean up a decomp and we've completely deodorized the property, that person will go in and say, oh, it still kind of smells in here a little bit. And we bring in fresh noses and they're like, no, it smells great. So hasn't really been an issue with us, but yeah, it can happen.
Right. But the question was surviving owners of properties.
Right. Yes. They are, again, we try to keep them out mainly for emotional reasons. It's not the way you want to remember a family member or a loved one. That's the only reason we would keep anybody out.
Right. Yeah, we leave it to their discretion, but we advise against it just because sometimes shock will bring them into a property and they'll see something that they then cannot unsee, and it will hit them once the shock wears off. So we're fine if the surviving owners or the surviving relatives want to be there And a lot of times they are in the house. They just avoid that particular room or area. Other times in decomps, they don't want anything to do with it until it's, you know, cleared out and whatnot. Just on that note, even though this has nothing to do with this question, a lot of times when someone passes, if it's in a property, the coroners will go through the whole property and try to find and take any valuables that they can with them with the body so that it can be turned over to the next of kin. Because surprisingly, when someone passes away, when that body's removed, we've seen properties get broken into very soon after. So I'm assuming that it is a long history of that. And so the coroners or whatever agency has made it kind of standard practice to take any valuables they can find and transport it with the body for the next of kin.
Right. And I believe statistically speaking that most break-ins are committed by neighbors or people in the neighborhood. So when you have police and ambulance and fire trucks and coroners out front with their sirens going, it causes a big stir. People find out what happened. They realize there's nobody at the house once they leave.
It looks appealing at that point.
Yeah. This is Katie Cakes from Cake Bites, a podcast adventure through gaming history. And listener Kathy Franco asked, have you ever been physically hurt or poked on a job?
The answer to that is not me.
I've never been hurt on a job. I had one guy working for us. He had a trash can that he had emptied in the roll-off. We were doing a hoarding job, and there was a piece of a desk or something that had it was a board with a nail sticking out of it. Actually, it was a screw, and he had stepped on it with his boot. He didn't realize that it actually had a nail in it, and so when he jumped out of the roll-off, it jammed the screw into his foot. And I was actually inside the house, and I just hear this blood-curdling scream, and I thought that he had been hit by a car or broke his ankle or something, so I ran out there, and yeah, it wasn't as bad as it sounded. It was a screw in the foot, and we had to yank it out and then treat it. But yeah, other than that, no, our guys have been pretty good about not hurting themselves.
Yeah, and it wasn't on a blood job, it was a hoarding job. Not that there's no risk, but it wasn't like he got poked by a needle, a used needle or something like that.
Yeah.
But no, we've never had any scares like that, like, blood splashing in your eye or mouth. We're super cautious with that. And honestly, if we've ever had any injury, or it would be on a hoarding job just because of different things. You go to grab something, something falls on your head.
There's a lot more potential to be for injury than there is on a biohazard job.
Right. So, yeah, knock on wood, though.
Ahoy, this is Dano Klonowski of the Wayne Gale Variety Hour podcast, and this question is from Ariel Shapiro, who says, Vanessa, you've mentioned you have kids. How do you explain to your children what mom and dad do for a living without freaking them out? And do you ever get weird reactions from their teachers at parent-teacher conferences when you explain what you do?
Okay, so we have similar questions to this, and so it might have been answered, but basically we kind of explain to our kids that we're helping people. And I mean, we do tell them now that they're older, that we clean up after blood or accidents. They can understand that. In terms of weird reactions from their teachers, or it's never really come up. So we haven't experienced the weird reactions. And a lot of times when...
At least not to our face.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think on that one, Ethan and I are really honest with our kids, and we just talk to them like they are adults. And so we try not to lie to them. We try not to sugarcoat stuff too much. We just tell them like it is. So we basically explain what we do, and they seem pretty cool about it. I don't know that our business will ever be handed down to any of our kids, though.
It's a little too soon to tell, but right now they don't deal well with blood.
So. Yeah, not even a little bit.
Hi, Vanessa. It's Sam from True Crime Storytime Podcast. Thanks for asking us to get involved and read a listener question for you. I've got one from Christina Appleman, and she wants to know, how long did it take for you to start making a profit?
Okay, I kind of touched on this, but I would say a year or two.
I think it's about a year and a half.
even at that point, the profit wasn't great. It was, you know, we're at least not in the red anymore, but.
Yeah, I mean, it gave us enough money to where I could work full time for the business rather than having to have a 9-to-5.
Right.
So, I mean, we were able to pay our bills and have a little bit of extra spending money, but it wasn't what I would consider profit.
Right.
G'day there from Melbourne, Australia. This is Sam Loy from the podcast Human Ordinary. And Kathy Franco wants to know, do you make your own cleaning solutions?
I'm assuming that's being asked because of the movie The Cleaner. And yeah, we don't. We buy specific solutions that are used to treat biohazard situations. Again, as far as the procedure goes, it's unregulated. So I guess theoretically someone could do that. It's not recommended because unless you're a trained chemist, when you're mixing chemicals, you don't know what kind of reaction you're going to create. You don't know if, you know, one chemical is going to eliminate the effects of another chemical. So we don't recommend that. We don't do that. We buy our own specific materials for that.
Hi, this is Diane, host of the History Goes Bump podcast. Lizette Saraceris wanted to ask Vanessa, have any of your competitors done anything shady to try and hurt your business or block you from getting jobs?
I'll start, and then Ethan, I know, is going to chime in because this one makes your blood boil. So we had a job. It was a really, really good sized job. It was a decomp, and it was being covered through insurance. And we got through the first part of the cleanup. Client was very happy with us, and then the insurance company came in.
Well, here's what happened. We did the biohazard aspect of the job, and the clients had to leave. They had to attend to funeral matters, and they didn't want us in the house when they weren't there, which is not common, but, you know, I get it. In any event, so we were supposed to come back, and we were going to start the odor remediation process. Before we had a chance to come back, the insurance company had hired an independent adjuster. That adjuster came in and recommended this other company and basically pushed this other company onto the client. So the client called us and canceled us for the rest of the job. It wasn't really an action directly from a competitor, but other than that, I don't think that's ever been a case. I mean, there are other companies in this industry that will use shitty tactics to get jobs, like lowballing. They'll say, oh, you know, this is an easy cleanup. It's only going to be such and such. And then they get in there and they go, oh, there's so much more than we thought. It's actually going to be this much.
Right. But yeah, he's right. We haven't had a competitor directly do anything shady that we know of. So we try not to talk poorly about our competitors unless they're really, and even then we don't really talk poorly of them. We'll just direct you over to do your own research on their reviews so you can draw your own conclusions. But if we know a client has a company coming out for an estimate and we know that company, will usually, oh yeah, they're a good company, or, you know, we don't try to talk them out of it. And I don't know that anybody has done that with us, but I think we're pretty fortunate in that regard.
Yeah. And likewise, we will, like she said, kind of inform the customer that, you know, the company that they are looking at going with may not be the best choice, and to, again, you know, do their own research on them. But, you know, if it's a good company, then, you know, we'll say they're a great company. If you decide to go with them, I understand.
Yeah. And just to clarify, even though I did before, he said something, we've never said they're not a good company. Do your own research. We will just say, you know, do research on that company, or, you know, we've had different feedback from other clients of theirs. And we just recommend you do your own research on the reviews.
This is Vincent from Gone Cold Podcast. Kathy Kier Pierce wants to know how you learn to clean a crime scene and if there are any state and or federal guidelines that you have to follow.
Okay, so I did training back in, I think, 2005, and it was a hands-on training, and so that's how I learned to do it, but that's how I learned. And then each state has their own different state and federal guidelines. California is pretty regulated, but in doing research on local nearby, not local, but nearby states, learning that not everywhere is as regulated. So,
yeah. And usually the regulations that come into play are mainly in regards to disposal of the biohazardous materials. In terms of the procedure, it's honestly right now pretty much countrywide is unregulated. The IICRC, which is the organization that monitors and oversees procedures as far as and in the remediation industry. So like they have what's called a standard on the proper way to dry out a house in the case of water damage. They are working on compiling a standard for crime and trauma restoration. And as far as I know, they are very close to doing that. But I think once that comes into play, it will become more of a regulated industry. But right now it is, as far as the cleanup goes, that's like the wild, wild west.
Thanks for listening. I've got a couple of trailers for other podcasts you might be interested in.
The simple truth is that children kill. Of course, accidents do happen, but kids have proven themselves to be undoubtedly capable of cold-blooded, premeditated murders that they had every opportunity to avoid committing, but engage in nonetheless.
Hi, Chardon High School, we had shots fired, gunshots, multiple gunshots.
Children have killed their parents, neighbors, classmates, and strangers. Kids have murdered their best friends, teachers, grandmas, and even their own babies.
Seth Pravaki murdered four members of his family and his brother's girlfriend back in 1998.
He's a 12-year-old Pennsylvania boy accused of killing his father's pregnant fiance, and he could become one of the youngest Americans ever to face life in prison.
Children have killed alone and in groups, with other kids and sometimes with adults too.
The frames that freeze the infant's last free moments show him playing outside a shop of the children who took James Bulger and killed him.
Who can even begin to speculate as to how people can justify resorting to murder? Not us.
Prosecutors say Lane confessed to the crime but offered no explanation for what drove him to kill.
There's no reason, there's no logic as to why they actually did it. The only reason why they actually took James was to murder him.
Well, I think that's the one baffling part of this case, that to this day we can't understand why he committed this mass murder.
This show focuses on the facts, details, and circumstances which give rise to murderous minors, killer kids. Join us weekly for a fresh tale of a parent's worst nightmare.
Hooker Chemical Corporation dumped over 80 toxic substances at Love Connect.
The $53 million she stole from the city of Dixon, Illinois,
orchestrating the largest lotto scam ever.
White-collar and corporate crime is a worldwide epidemic. From simple embezzlements, frauds, con artists, and Ponzi schemes, to devastating environmental disasters and economic depressions, these financially motivated crimes have shaped our world in unimaginable ways, all in the name of greed. Swindled is a podcast that uses narrative storytelling, archival audio, and immersive soundscapes to explore these true cases of white-collar and corporate crime. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you may get your podcasts. For more information about the show, visit our website at swindledpodcast.com and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Swindled Podcast.
All right, if you liked what you just heard, show some love and be sure to subscribe. I thought it would be fun to do some bloopers from the first season. Do you regularly, because I can say that really well. Do you regularly, okay.
I'll read it.
Great. Now my scripts are all going to have this word in it, okay?
Do you regularly get tested for certain diseases or illnesses?
The eldest daughter, amid the screams and chaos, despite the death of many, the poor man turned and scrunched his face in disgust and looked to the front to see what the holdup. He turned back and looked to the front to see what the holdup was. He then tried to move away from my husband. that's bad. Oh, okay. Okay, hold on. You're gonna catch the next hour of me just laughing uncontrollably. Okay, hold on. Oh, Jesus. Okay, hold on. Okay. Okay. I can't do it. I guess our podcast goes dead after episode 3. All right. Okay. Fuck you, Ethan. Okay. He turned back and looked to the front to see what the holdup was. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.